You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the 54th installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. My business partner, Doug Gefeller, and I co-host this business talk show, which airs on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on octalkradio.net. Today, I'll be interviewing our 80th and our 81st guests that we've brought to you so far since doing this show, and I'm excited about both of our guests today. Our first guest, let me make sure that Dr. Saranjeev Kohli is on the line. So let me check. And Dr. K, are you on the line?
Yes, Rick. How are you doing?
I am great. I tell you what, I will be right back to you in a minute because we have a very exciting, chock full of information radio show today. So I want to just let our listening audience know that this show is really designed to help business owners and top executives make better, more informed decisions. Doug and I do that by interviewing thought leaders and executives who have what we term transferable knowledge. Our radio show is an extension of the 15-year business practice that we lead here in Orange County, where we build CEO peer groups, and we do that under the brand name Renaissance Executive Forums. Reason why we do that is that we know that 80% of the business issues and opportunities that a business owner top executive faces are common with those of other business owners who run similarly sized firms. And so by bringing them together, we can help them make better, more informed decisions regarding the opportunities and challenges that their businesses face. Today, our first guest, as I said, is Dr. Saranjeev Kohli. And our topic in discussion today will be the importance and the impact a brand identity can have on a business. And that's regardless of the business's size. We're very fortunate to have Dr. Kohli here today. He holds a PhD in marketing from Indiana University, and he specializes in brand and corporate identity. As professor of marketing at California State University Fullerton, he is a double recipient of the Business School's Best Professor Award. His research has been reported in academic journals and newspapers, and he's consulted with firms such as Autodesk, Canon USA, Dean Health Systems, KFC, Lucent Technologies, Odetix, Regency Healthcare, Taco Bell, Verizon, and many others. A comedian by avocation, he won the Indiana University Comedy Competition and has opened for Dennis Miller of Saturday Night Live. So bringing you live here tonight to our show is Dr. Kohli. So without any further ado, Dr. K, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show on octalkradio.net. Would you share with our audience your path to the Mahalo College?
Sure, Rick. Thanks for the introduction. And it's a pretty straightforward path, actually. I did my bachelor's in mechanical engineering and then an MBA in marketing, both from India. So I have a very hard nose for numbers, but also an innately creative bent of mind. After that, I started my PhD at Indiana University, Bloomington, and finished that in 1992. And ever since, I've been teaching at Cal State Fullerton, enjoying it very much, and may retire here as well if the state doesn't go on cutting salaries.
Well, maybe you can help the audience as well, because I kind of said a little bit in my introduction of you, Dr. K, but could you expand upon kind of your area of expertise within the Mahalo College?
Sure. My core area of expertise, I would have to say, if I have to use one word, that would be branding. If I have to be more specific, I'll have to say it's brand identity. I do teaching, I do research, I do workshops, and I consult in the area of branding. So feel pretty privileged to be able to do all three, and it's a nice mix. I mean, what I learned from my research, I try to apply into my consulting and take those things to the classroom floor. And all the work, you know, essentially all the work I do ultimately is trying to answer the question, what makes for a strong brand identity? And in that respect, you know, we will do branding, brand image research, brand names, logos, slogans, both creation and testing, corporate identity, trademarks, brand equity work, So I would say anything which is related to brand identity is, you know, as specific as it can get. Now, another thing I do is marketing research. That's another area of my expertise, and I can do any custom research, and I've done tons, you know, ranging all the way from customer satisfaction to pricing to new concept development. But what I truly enjoy is utilizing marketing research to study how to develop a strong brand identity.
And one of the things that I know, Dr. K, we're going to be talking about later during our interview is how your bias towards and experience with using empirical evidence as a justification and kind of the background in the work that you do in your consulting work as an extension of your experience and in working at Cal State Fullerton. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was of your and all the things that you've kind of personally have learned and the experiences that you've had, is there a key lesson learned that you've developed through your experience that you would like to share with our audience?
I think that's yes. I think that's a very good question. If I have to pick one thing, like you pointed out, I'm a firm believer in empirical work, and not I do not like, you know, pure opinions. There's a lot of science to what we do, and I'm not a believer in pure opinion. For the same reason, you know, I'll get requests from people or questions, you know, they'll show me their business card and say, this is what we do, what do you think? And very frankly, I don't like to answer impromptu questions like that, not because I'm trying to ignore that, but because, you know, if you really want to be a good judge of brand identity, I need to know a lot more about your business. I need to know a lot more about the about your brand, which segment you're going for, how are customers responding to it, you know, how are you differentiating your brand. Unless I know all that, you know, the response is very superficial. And unfortunately, what I found in the industry is you get a lot of people who will become quote-unquote guru based on relatively short experience. And it's very opinion-based work. So the nature of the task is such, you know, it's subjective. You know? I mean, I may like a name and you may not like it. So I can't force you to like it. However, that said, we can still quantify it. You know, we go to your target market and find out how they're responding. Ultimately, that's what determines your brand. So essentially, you know, we try to be very objective, we try to be very empirical in our approach, and we do not like to just base it on what we think our opinion. Even if we express it, we are very qualified in saying, listen, this is just an opinion, so I'm not going to promise that this is the way things work. Another related thing is this idea of fads, you know. I mean, a lot of people are heavily influenced by the latest fads. And branding is a long-term exercise. At its core, branding hasn't changed a whole lot. Every 5 years, something new comes up and people start thinking, oh, this is the demise of the brand. It's over now. This is the latest thing. So nowadays, the talk is about social media. It's very important. I'm not going to take anything away from it. However, that said, social media, at the end of the day, is still a way to communicate your brand, but ultimately the success of your brand depends on how well you define it, and that way you can be more sure-footed about it. So we like to, you know, to kind of conclude, we like to be on very sure ground and know exactly what we're talking about, and we like to base it on numbers and empirical work. So we like to call our consulting work research-based consulting rather than pure opinion-based.
Okay. And before I move on to the fourth question, I see here from my producer that he's asking if you wouldn't mind in future answers talking a little louder so that he can mix the board and get the audio levels a little higher for your answers, because they're so important for our guests to be able to hear them clearly. So I know, Dr. K, that is not a problem for you, given your training as a comedian by trade. So,
sure. And if it's not, you know, If it's not the right level, just correct me and I'll try to adjust it accordingly.
Well, let me look at my producer. He's nodding. Yes, that's good. So keep it up. All right. You can even talk louder, he said. Go for it.
Talk louder. All right. So I'll try my best.
I know that you've worked with many firms and you've helped them determine their brand identity and also, which is an important piece, its value in the market. Can you explain to our audience how a brand can have a positive value and maybe even in some cases a negative value in the market?
Sure, absolutely. That's an excellent question. I mean, if you were to think about any product or service, there are two components to it. There are two big components to its success. One is what we can call inherent quality, and the second is brand image. Now, a lot of times, again, people say, well, image is not important or image is really important. But if you look at, again, you know, if you look at what's happening in the market, both things are equally, well, I shouldn't say equally, both things are important to the success of the product. You cannot have, the first step is the inherent quality. You have to have a good quality product. If you look around, you will have difficulty finding out of tens of thousands of products out there, you'll have difficulty pinpointing products which are of poor quality and still very successful in the market. You can, again, you may be able to find a couple, but generally speaking, that's not the norm. So you may be able to fool some customers all the time, all customers, but some, but definitely not all customers all the time, to paraphrase Lincoln, I think. So you have to have inherent quality, but that's not the end of the story. The second building block, again, which is very, very important, is brand image. And depending on the nature of the product or service you're providing, these two components may differ in how important they are. So if we were to go to two opposite ends of the spectrum, fasteners for, say, airplanes, that's a very mundane, mechanical product. And brand image, yes, it can help a little bit, but that's what you can get out of brand image is going to be very, very limited there. Now, if you go on the other extreme, you get to a product like, say, perfume. And there, the inherent quality isn't that important. Yes, it's important. Again, I'm never going to say it's not important, but it's not as important. What really matters is what is the brand image. I mean, that's an image-based product. I mean, you can produce expensive perfumes which sell for $80. You can sell, and companies have tried it, to create the same scent for $8. But they've been disasters. They never succeeded. Even though if you think about perfumes, that's the only thing that should matter. And even in painkillers, I mean, there have been studies which have showed that even in painkillers, a third of the relief is attributable to the brand name, not to the quality of the product, not to the ingredients, but to brand names. If I take Tylenol and someone tells me, well, I gave you Tylenol, it'll be a third more effective just because I know I took Tylenol and not a generic brand. So brand name is extremely important. Now, therefore, the value which the brand lends to the product can be very substantial. Again, take an example of perfumes. It's the brand name which makes all the difference. So it can have a substantial positive influence. On the other hand, it can have a negative influence. There are brands out there which people do not like. People have a very poor image of those brands. A case in point would be Hyundai several years ago. I mean, my class did a study. We did a marketing research study. We showed the product without the brand name, then showed the product with the brand name. Guess what? After we show the brand name, the value of the product actually drops. So that would be negative. But Hyundai has done a phenomenal job of bringing up their brand image. And once again, going back to my original point, it was possible because they also increased the inherent quality. So they improved the inherent quality and then built on that, and now they have a very strong brand image. a very positive image.
Dr. K, when you were using the Hyundai example from several years ago, when you're talking about the perceived value of the product, you're talking about the perceived value in the eyes of the potential consumer of that product, correct?
Correct. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And that is powerful, given knowing that is a if you want to fix it, it's powerful to know it so that you can fix it. But at least being aware of it has to factor into how you have relationships then with your clients and how that translates probably in many other ways that you position your company in the marketplace. Your examples, many of them are large companies, whether they're, you know, military components or perfumes or a Hyundai, but which may lead some of our listening audience to say, well, Dr. K today is talking about stuff that's only for really big companies, and I'm not a really big company yet, and so maybe I shouldn't, pay as close attention or heed his words as well. Is it your experience that brand identity is only something that's for large companies?
No, actually, I would say it's important for a company of every size. I mean, literally equally important for a company of every size. The reason we hear more examples about large companies, the reason I give more examples is because if I take a big brand, the entire audience knows what we're talking about. If I pick a small brand, you know, that may lose 80% of the audience because they may not be familiar with the brand, so I'll have to kind of inform them as to what the product or brand is. So that said, the logic is absolutely identical whether you're large or small. Now, the only difference is the amount of money a small business can invest. So it has to be in proportion to the size of your firm. And there's a way to do calculations to determine, I mean, how much investment should I be able to make, should I be making in my brand? So if you're a small company, if you're a $100 million company, spending, say, $1 million, I'm just throwing a number, makes sense. But if you're a $5 million company, well, you shouldn't be spending $1 million on the brand because that would be, the returns on that investment wouldn't be as high then. So as consumers, you know, I'm sure you can relate to this. No matter whenever you pick a big ticket item, whether you're talking about picking up an automobile or motorbike, a clothing item or a small value grocery item, we're always influenced by the brand name. I mean, rarely will we see a product where we say, well, brand name really doesn't matter at all. Now, there are some products where that might be the case. But generally speaking, big or small brand image is important. And if you don't do it, that doesn't mean the brand image is not important. The consumer, who's the ultimate judge, still has a brand image in his or her mind. So it will get created for you based on what they hear from other sources, based on their own experience. So if you are smart about branding, you definitely want to create and then manage that image. Whether you're big or small really doesn't matter. It may vary from product to product, but not on the size of the business.
Interesting. And I completely agree with your position that whether a company and a leader has put any energy into managing a brand and creating a brand identity, their company, if they've been in business for any amount of time, has one. And probably the first thing that would be important for a company to do if they wish to embark upon a brand identity strategy is to understand what their current brand is in the marketplace. Would you agree?
Absolutely, right on the dot. You have to know where you stand, and then you build it from there.
So let's talk about advice or recommendations that you would make to a business owner or a CEO who's maybe unclear about what their firm's brand identity is in the marketplace.
Sure.
What would you suggest they do?
That's a very good question. The first step is, again, trying to determine to what extent image is important for my product or service. Okay, that's step number one. Now, in my response to your previous question, I emphasize that the size of the company doesn't matter. It's the nature of the product or service that matters. So once you realize, okay, I need brand image is important for me, then you need to make sure you have the right image. Now, at a very simplistic level, brand equity has three components. Okay. The first is that your brand is differentiated. Why? Because unless you're differentiated, you will never be able to charge a premium. You can't, in your advertising, in your promotions, you can't ask a customer, buy my product and pay me a premium, because guess what? Well, we're like everyone else. You can't say that. So first thing is you have to be differentiated. Otherwise, you will always be competing on price, and that's a nuisance. Second, the customers have to be knowledgeable about this differentiation. They should know what the differentiation is. Sometimes companies create differentiation, never spend the money to educate the customers about it. Well, that doesn't go anywhere. And the third part is that they have to respond to that differentiation. In other words, they need to believe that the differentiation is meaningful. Yes, this makes sense to me. So what I've essentially done is, in a way, I've outlined a three-step process, which is very systematic to determine how to create the brand image. Create a differentiation, educate your customers about it, and make sure they're buying into it. Now, one thing which I've experienced is a lot, actually, is a lot of companies, and this is typical for smaller companies. The bigger companies know what the game is, how the game is played. Smaller companies tend to differentiate based on either price, which, like I said, will never give you a long-term advantage because you'll always be competing on that, trying to cut costs and price. And second is, if they try to differentiate, they often go for tangible attributes, which is, you know, my paper towel is thicker than yours. Now, a study by BBDO, one of the largest leading advertising agencies, showed that when companies differentiate on tangible attributes, the consumers think all brands are more or less the same. Why? Because the next company will make it a thicker paper towel and they'll say, look, mine is thicker. So once again, empirically, if you look around, most successful brands, like Coke doesn't say, you know, it's the sweetest, or it's the most calories, or it's the least calories. It's always image-based differentiation, and that's a concept some people struggle with because they feel it doesn't immediately convey to the customer what it is. True, but that's a long-term exercise, and that's what you want to build on. So try to come up with differentiation which is image-based and not physical attribute-based, benefit-based, and not
attribute-based. Dr. K, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second because sure. I think what you're saying has significant impact on many small and mid-sized companies, because many times the leader of that company is a technologist. You know, maybe they were very strong in their field from a technical perspective, and they've started a firm. And so there is this, My experience in working with these individuals is there is almost a bias that for the differentiation to be valid, it needs to be tangible. And yes. your education today to our audience is 180 degrees, let's say, from much of my experience. I guess I'm asking because you also work with many firms, sometimes larger, but you're working with firms like that as well. Is that your experience, that what you're saying just now in this interview may be counter to the intuition of the business leader that you're working with?
Yes, exactly. I'm in lockstep with you on that note. I mean, my experience, like I said, is, you know, the tendency is to move towards the tangible, the physical attributes. And like I said, you can never get a strategic edge. I mean, if you look at BMW slogan, which is one of the most recognizable slogans, or for that matter, Nike's positioning, just do it. When they would have created it, I can assure you there must have been a lot of resistance because people are thinking, what does that mean? Just do it. But it's that attitude, you know. Nike is associated with that just do it attitude. And that's a position which is difficult now to replicate, for a competitor to replicate. So if they had just said, well, buy Nike because it has the thickest insole, that positioning would have vanished, you know, within a couple of years, if not within a couple of months of the positioning being created. So,
it ever existed in the first place, because to your point, the customer base might have said, you know what, I think all insoles are thick, so yours being thicker, I don't accept that, because I'm very comfortable in Adidas or someone else's shoe as well. Yes. Is that your, line of reasoning?
And if it works, let's assume it did work. Let's assume customers buy into the logic that your insole is thicker. Well, it's very easy for Adidas to go out and say, well, it seems like people are demanding thicker insoles. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out after that, well, we need to make the insole thicker. Then they come back and say, look, our insoles are thicker now. So you can never get a, what we call a strategic edge based on that. You can get a very limited short-term edge, if at all, based on these tangible attributes. And that's why you'll never see big-name brands focused on tangible attributes.
So you're talking about short-term advantage versus long-term. So that leads me to a question, you know, speaking of length of time. In your experience working with businesses and top executives, how long does it take a firm to establish a brand identity, maybe the brand identity that they want in the minds of their consumers and prospects?
Very good question. I'll break it down into two parts. One is creating the identity, and then second is executing it and managing it. Now, creating can be a quick exercise. When I say quick, you know, if you're very thoughtful about it, say you use a couple of months, just to give you a ballpark estimate. But when it comes to creating, you want to make sure that you have created the right identity, because you don't have the luxury of changing it again and again. So, for example, if you look at McDonald's, it's got the same fun McDonald's children-friendly image, very consistent. But Burger King, a competitor, has a very diffused image. I mean, I use this as a quick exercise in a lot of my presentations. People have a very clear image of McDonald's, and they have very confusing, no clue about what Burger King stands for. So the key there is it's a short exercise, but you want to do it right. Now, once you have that, then it's a matter of executing, and it's executing it very, very consistently in every facet, whether it's promotion or advertising or pricing or your location. You deliver that very consistently. If you tamper with that and you get, again, sidetracked by some short-term gains, and that hurts the brand name. So creating the brand name, short exercise, but you want to do it right. It's very, very important. Now, once you've created, you want to stick with it, and that I called work in progress. It never gets done. It's a ongoing process which will last forever.
Which is why it's so important to get it right the first time.
You got it. Absolutely right on the dot.
Okay. Yeah, this is very interesting, and for some of our listening audience, they probably will recall that we had you as our keynote speaker at our August 3rd executive conference, which was very well received. Is there anything else about you or your consulting practice that we've not talked about today, Dr. K, that you would like to mention?
Sure. First off, I'm sure they remember seeing me. I don't know if they remember hearing me, because if you remember, I didn't have a voice that day. But coming back to your question, like I said, you know, our perspective on this is that there's a lot of science to it. So you want to measure it, you want to test it, you want to quantify it. We don't believe in opinion-based work, because that's what it is, and it's just pure opinion. We want to quantify it. We want to be on very solid grounds, because, like I said, this is a long-term exercise. You can't change it once you've done. Otherwise, all your efforts have been wasted. And beyond that, I mean, you know, I've been at this for about 17 years, and that's the sole focus of my work. We provide very original quality work. We don't, and a very good value, I'll have to say, very good value. We're not in cookie-cutter solutions. Once we get to work on a project, we really like to sink our teeth into it. And we choose our clients carefully also. If a client doesn't believe in our approach, or if we feel, you know, what we have to offer is not a good value for them, we will say that. So, I mean, we'll sometimes turn down the client for their own good because either they don't agree completely with our philosophy or we think the value may not be there for them. As a matter of fact, I talked to one of your audience members a month later after the presentation, and we came to a conclusion that, you know, it may not be good for them to use our services because it wouldn't be the best value, you know, for what they were looking for. So we are very fair, very objective, very value-oriented, and we try to give a good customer experience.
So if someone wanted to learn more about you and your practice, how would they do that, Dr. K?
Sure. Because I'm a professor and a consultant, I'll give you two sets of contact information. I'm a professor at Cal State Fullerton. The email address there is C as in Charlie, K-O-H-L-I, that's ccoley at fullerton.edu. And for my consulting outfit, the email address is same thing, ccoley at identitypulse, one word, identitypulse.com. Phone numbers, respective phone numbers at the school, 657-278-3796. At the consulting outfit, it's 800-355-9817. And the consulting website is identity, as in brand identity, pulse, as in the pulse of a person, identitypulse.com.
Outstanding. Well, again, time flies when we have the chance to interact, Dr. K. I really appreciate you making the time to be a radio show guest here today on Critical Mass, the radio show. And I look forward to having you in the future as a future guest on the radio show.
Thanks, Rick. My pleasure. Look forward to working with you.
Have a good day.
You too.
As I had mentioned, Dr. K was our keynote speaker in August when we had our executive conference, and he did have laryngitis, but he delivered an outstanding discussion on brand, and we just basically talked a little bit on that today. And this is a part of what Doug and I are doing every day in the business community here in Orange County, California, reaching out to thought leaders, whether they are peer business owners and CEOs, top executives, whether they are PhD professors teaching at our various schools here in Orange County. There are strong thought leaders throughout the business community and the educational community, and it's really Doug and my interest and excited to do it, to find these individuals and bring them into the show so that you all can have the opportunity to learn from them, and hopefully by that discussion it will help you to make better, more informed decisions. Not too dissimilar to what Doug and I do inside of our CEO peer groups under Renaissance Executive Forums, or whether it's in our individual coaching and consulting that Doug primarily does for our business, as well as the other tools that we have to help a business move forward in a positive direction. So the next thought leader that we're going to have on the show is David Rodiker, and the topic is going to be how small businesses can be found online, whether it be in Google or Yahoo or the Bing search engine. And David is and has been with Relevant Ads since 2004 when he founded the firm. But before that, he was a key executive for Local.com, where he helped them conduct a successful IPO. Many of us remember what an IPO is. Very successful IPO, raising $25 million. David graduated engineering from the University of Southern California as a Phi Kappa Scholar. He also holds an MS degree in biomathematics from the University of California, Los Angeles. And it gives me great pleasure to bring David online and begin his interview. How are you this afternoon, David?
Hey, good afternoon, Rick. Doing well.
Good to have you on the radio show. David, if you could spend a minute, and I briefly highlighted your kind of your path to Relevant Ads, but if you could spend a little bit more time talking with our audience about your background, I would appreciate it.
Sure, you made me sound pretty good there. I hope to live up to that those accolades. Well, I'm true blue from Southern California, and I grew up in a normal family. I was the youngest of four. I have been involved when I was 6 years old, got my first computer, and learned binary as practically my first language. So I've always been involved in the technology side, but being the youngest, I played around a lot, and I had a lot of fun. I was never a very serious student. I got C's and D's in school, but I had a lot of fun with and got in trouble with friends and did normal things that many of the kids these days did. And but around 16, I had my older brother got in a major accident, and he was mentally handicapped from it, and required my me to take care of him. It kind of reversed the rules. I became his older brother, and in those same years, I being from SoCal as a white, blonde hair, blue eyed kid, I got sunburned often, and I came down with a melanoma, stage 2 skin cancer. So I had a quick turnaround between, the next years after my 16th birthday to taking life, very serious. And, after having lost, or being fired from a few jobs, I recognized that if I was going to do anything significant in the world, that I needed to be educated. So from then on, I took school very serious. I got in the serious subjects, calculus, physics, and in my senior year, sitting with freshmen, mostly Asian kids, it was somewhat intimidating, but I was actually able to do really well. Wasn't as challenging as I thought it would be, and I got a 3.00, exactly a B average. And that, fortunately, was the minimum cutoff to allow me to get into colleges. I went to USC, which fortunately accepted me despite being at the minimum threshold, because I had some family connections that previously had gone there. They're very big on the alumni involvement. So I was did very well, was happy in at USC. I was a very serious student, and I continued that educational route to UCLA, where I did an MD-PhD. But a couple years into that study, I realized that medicine was more of a art, and my mind was a lot more science-oriented and technology. So around 99, I found that an easy transition to get into technology companies in the dot-com boom. So over the next years, I spent time at various dot-com startups. We made some pay-per-click engine at ePilot. I made a mail service, much like Hotmail, called Mail2World, and some good technology. In 2004, as you mentioned, local.com, which we were able to take a business model of creating a destination for people to do local searches. So it was a really cool time. It was an innovative step, one which really opened the pathway for creating relevant ads.
Which leads me to my next question, David, which is, tell our audience, we kind of teased them with the subject, helping business owners be able to be found on various search engines, but what is it that Relevant Ads does specifically?
So, yes, Relevant Ads, our mission is simply that, getting local businesses online. The Internet has created an opportunity for businesses to be found by people who are looking for local business. And quite simply, that means that when a user goes to the Internet and enters in a few search terms, they're going to bias the search results to local businesses. So those of you that choose your poison of a search engine, but I'll use Google as the de facto example, since it is the majority of popular search engine in the U.S. and worldwide. If you just type in chiropractor, they're going to do a reverse IP lookup, determine where you're located, and actually show you local chiropractors. So they show you that on a map, and we're pretty familiar with the way that looks. You have to bear in mind, though, this is very new. Internet is new in total, but local search results are only a few years old. And the perseverance of local search results is almost a common staple these days. We've seen that local search makes up a growing number of search queries, and people aren't just going to the Internet to search once in a while. They're doing it routinely, several times in the week. Whereas compared to the Yellow Page model, where people might pick up the Yellow Pages a couple times in a year, people are coming back to the Internet and doing searches. So when they're doing those searches for chiropractor, or whether it be a dentist or attorney, the local businesses that come up predominantly have come from databases of InfoUSA and Axiom and Amakai, lead generation companies that many business owners are familiar with, having purchased or acquired leads. So those companies, though, literally their basis for their database have come from transcribing Yellow Page books. They've taken about 2,000 different Yellow Page books across the country, aggregate them every year, send them to the Philippines or India, and they have that information transcribed, hand-typed in, and as well as scanned in to retrieve all the business information. At best, we find that they get some businesses and they get some information from the businesses. Because bear in mind, the book doesn't have that much information. It just has the ad that was presented. And it has a category, but by and large, it's missing a lot of data. And even in the best case scenario, it's believed to be about 60% accurate. And that's because new businesses pop up. They're not in the book. Old businesses are no longer available or around, but their information was there a few years ago. And then sometimes the information shown is strictly for marketing purposes, and it's not actually what the business true phone number or address may even be. So it's a major problem in the United States that where the search engines and the online destinations get their data from is not exactly reliable. So we've gone about making a system for businesses to get their information corrected, populated, and optimized for the search engines.
Well, it reminds me of the, I don't want to insult you by this, but garbage in, garbage out. As I'm listening to you describe the process that is used to get that information online, it's fraught with error and obsolescence from the get-go, let alone over time how it ages probably pretty badly. So knowing that you're aware of that and your firm is engaged in helping businesses make their information much more relevant and current is an interesting discussion that we're going to have throughout the rest of this interview. David, if I ask you of all the stuff that issue things that you've learned, education, your various technology and leadership at executive level positions, now running your own firm here for 5 years plus, is there one overarching life lesson that you kind of use to guide your firm and lead your business?
Well, I'd like to say that I've thought through the philosophies that thoroughly. I'm a fairly simple person. I try to be that way. The guiding methodology that I live my life by is one that I would really like everyone, I would appreciate others live theirs by as well, which is what would be good for me is what I would want done to others. And, you know, in the Bible they say, do unto others as you would have done unto you. So, you know, I'm reminded of that in many situations where I've had persons in our business and partners and attaining great talent is only possible with that sort of mindset. Companies these days, can get the most benefit out of their own talent pool. So the only way that I find that any business is sustainable is if everyone along for the ride has a similar mindset, and that's what mine is. So as it transpires to different persons in different capacities, we do have awards and bonuses that we would tend to push off to persons that are sales oriented. We've got great talent. I've actually been able to have a new CEO come into here. We've got our SEO expert that is phenomenal talent, and those persons, like I said, the fact that they're here is the same motivations that I'm here for, and that's what I think makes the difference long term. In the past, I've seen how people are treated differently, and it creates divisions, and long term, it just makes things not consistent. So I believe that the universal fairness, it's, of course, with recognition of people of different degrees and talent pools, is appropriate.
Thank you for a thoughtful answer, and one that is grounded in obviously thoughts not related directly to business, and I appreciate you bringing that to the attention of our audience. And I guess that would I'd like to get back then to what you were talking about as you were talking about the challenges that a business owner has in getting their company found in the various search engines. And so, you know, why should a business owner be interested in going to the next step, which is using a service such as your firm offers, David?
Well, you know, it's the internet has been a great vehicle for advertising for businesses. I'd like to say it works for every business, but that's not. I don't know if that's quite the statistic. It certainly works for the majority of them. We can point to the several examples of this with that are occurring on a daily basis, but we've seen this transition occurring over the last decade with pay-per-click advertising. The presence of Google and Yahoo and these social networks is an indication that it does work, and we know from our daily lives where we're getting our information these days. So there's no question about the fact that is the internet a good place to advertise. What we've seen, though, is a transition from the type of advertisers. You know, just as a total market of advertising in general, local advertising makes up the majority of advertising. Nationwide advertisers and large advertisers are very significant, but it's still about 55% in favor of local-based advertising. And that's not something that was capable even just a few years ago for the local advertiser to get involved. So we've had these nationwide brands really dominate in pay-per-click and overall advertising on the internet. So we've been able to construct our programs to specifically deal with the local-based advertisements. And that's done in a few different matters of both what we dub as organic as well as pay-per-click and local maps advertising. So whereas in the past that cost a lot of money, we've been able to construct a low-cost package and manage a lot of that.
You know, I view technology as having the potential to be the great equalizer on many fronts. But certainly in the business community, as you're answering that question, I'm thinking here is the opportunity for a thoughtful business owner or top executive to begin to outsmart the larger competitors who clearly have probably more of a marketing budget to spend. But if they do this properly, they're able to put their business in front of people that are proactively looking for companies that offer solutions like they do. Because I agree with you, the first place many people are going to find a business that solves a problem that they have is on the internet. Can you touch on sort of what you're doing, maybe in a little more specific without being too specific, about what it is that a business owner who's looking to become more prominent in the local search directory gets from working with relevant ads?
Right. No, I have no problem being very specific about that. In fact, I've given discussions on this in the past. What we do is specifically focuses around content and the management of content. We work with the business owners to identify what it is their business does and how they'd like to be represented when users are trying to find them. So we've constructed what we call a service tag, and that is a particular type of service or product in a particular region. So whether it be chiropractor in Laguna Beach or a DUI attorney in San Diego, handyman in La Jolla, that's the sort of stereotype that we try to present the business as, so that's in the light of how people are going to remember them or search for them. And how we go about that, though, is we have a very structured way of gathering the content, dozens of structured fields. So we, you know, get the basic elements of information, and then we push that to several destinations. We give that structured information to websites that are looking for that local content that they would not normally be able to get except from the large databases, like I mentioned previously with InfoUSA's, et cetera. So our focus on pushing that out to several places actually has a very interesting benefit. While we provide it directly to Google and Yahoo, they actually have strategies in which they aggregate it by crawling the internet. And so the content that they find or they're looking for local information is to tie back more points of reference for what the business does and also to get a sense of how important and how fresh is the business. As I mentioned, businesses that are no longer doing business may be still in the database. The only way that Google knows that they're not necessarily in business any longer is that there's not much said about them any longer. It was maybe popular a few years back, but nothing's happened with the old business down the corner. And that's because they're not there anymore, or if they are, they're really not doing more business. So by our strategy of pushing the information out to several websites, several destinations, we end up creating a vibe that the business is alive and kicking, and here's all the services that they perform. So that ends up becoming a, as we call it, a local search engine optimization technique or local SEO.
And do you focus on, you mentioned Google as kind of being the 800-pound gorilla, even though there are viable alternatives to Google. Are you focusing on Google, or what is your strategy when you work with a business owner or top executive to have their company more searchable?
Well, the fact is that, We are oriented towards search as a mechanism, as a mode for getting our customers to be found and to attain more customers. But the fact is that there are new destinations that pop up and they in their own right have a popularity that is of importance. So we do work with several popular destinations. And I'll just name off a handful for the audience that they may be aware of. Super Pages, Yellow Pages. More recently, we've established Yelp, and very soon we're also establishing Merchant Circle as additional syndications. Those destinations have their own user base, have users that go there or trust that destination, look for more information that they, and find their local businesses that they'll trust. From those sources. And it also feeds back to the syndication strategy that by being on those sites, it creates more of a vibe and interest to be found. So the focus on search is our mode of interest. We do look at MSN or Bing, I should qualify as their brand, and Yahoo, and Google as well. Typically, Google ends up being the focal point. We certainly leverage and would like to have the other destinations popular in addition to Google. But the foundation of search being the main mechanism is where we stand to present our customers.
David, yesterday, Doug interviewed Rachel Pradhan, and Rachel's discussion was how a business owner, top executive, can use social media to kind of expand their brand in the marketplace, both a personal, professional brand and their company's brand. Can you talk for a minute how Relevant Ads is connecting with the trend towards pushing information to clients and the recent rise of social media?
Well, so brands in total, social media and destinations, they're popping up all the time. We have early on Hotmail being acquired by Microsoft, another destination popping up, and all of a sudden Hotmail is a big brand with MySpace and Google, establishing huge amount of advertising on theirs as a destination. These things are rising all the time. After Google purchasing MySpace or purchasing advertising rights on MySpace, they then had to buy YouTube, which is now the third most popular destination on the Internet. Then a college kid out of nowhere starts Facebook, and all of a sudden, that last investment didn't look as good. And it continues now with Twitter and other ones, and there will be more in the future. From our vantage point, we've gathered all this content, and we are continuously looking at new places to publish it. We can kind of see what the Exosphere is today, and we're still adopting it and incorporating it. as new ones come around, we certainly are in position to leverage them, and we'll continue to do so. So it's kind of a fun business because we're constantly developing. We're constantly moving with the flow of the internet, and it's quite exciting. Relevant Ads has kind of taken a approach to be more of a service bureau and focus on that technology. We have established Local Splash as our predominant brand that we sell these local services under, as well our own resident SEO expert is quite well renowned for being that. And when searching for those sort of things with our brand, it's penetrating, it's being found, and so there is something to be established on our front. But our main purpose at the end of the day is to reinforce the business, our customer, and the brand that they represent, and the fact that they represent a service or service tag of why they want to be found. So we kind of have to operate on the fine line of pushing the fact that we've got a business to we have to represent our customers, and we are in fact an agency, and their eyes and ears to the internet.
Interesting. Dave, is there anything else about your organization that I haven't thought to ask you or that we haven't talked about during this interview that you would like to mention at this point?
Yeah, you know, I kind of touched on it by presenting how we've evolved into our brand that we are today. And we really are a technology-based company. We provide a service, and we've grown significantly in customer service as well. But technology and that team of continual development and business development is really our foundation. We've established most of our sales through agent and reseller relations. Many of these are independent individuals that take our product and services to their local market, to the businesses that they're familiar with. And it's quite empowering for us, for them to be able to offer to their local community a service that is very novel and provides quite a benefit for them in continual marketing of their business. And it's also quite a benefit from our side. So we share in that revenue with the agents and provide a good entrepreneurial opportunity to them. So it's something that we've taken to heart as far as our business model and how we're continuing to grow it. So I would provide just make the mention that the business opportunity as far as agents and entrepreneurs as well as other marketing oriented companies that there is an opportunity for providing local-based advertising services.
Okay, David, so if there are some of those entrepreneurs out there who are listening, or there are business owners who are looking to get their companies more found, if you will, through local search optimization that you talked about, how does someone get in touch with you and learn more about Relevant Ads?
Well, you can do a number of different searches. I like to play around with it sometimes, but we're local SEO local business online, but in reality, localsplash.com is probably the best website that someone can land to understand what our offerings are and to get in contact with us.
Well, I want to thank you for the thoughtful discussion that we had today. I feel like I do after many of these interviews, and you know, we just really scratched the surface, I think, on getting into really understanding and educating and sharing information. But I do appreciate your time with us today, and would like to say, David, that maybe in the future we can have you back for another episode of Critical Mass, and we can talk a little bit more detail on some of the things that we just kind of touched on today.
Would love to do so, Rick. Thanks much for the opportunity.
I appreciate it. Thank you, David Rodiker of Relevant Ads. Again, listening audience, another example of a business owner, top executive, who is doing something that by learning what they are doing can help you make better, more informed decisions. It clearly is an area that a lot of companies are looking at, their ability to be found by the major search engines, and clearly David, with his background and track record, speaks for itself in the success that he's having in his current firm. So Doug and I are very excited about the continuing evolution of this radio show, Critical Mass, the radio show as heard live here on OCTalkRadio.net. I hope you enjoyed the show today. I hope you've enjoyed the interviews, and I hope they've provided you with, you know, new ideas and information. Our goal is to help you make better, more informed decisions. If you'd like to learn more about Doug's and my business practice, excuse me, that's Critical Mass for Business, as you've heard from other episodes of this radio show. We strongly encourage you to check out Critical Mass for Business and learn more about what we do. Until tomorrow, when I had the opportunity to be back as your host, and we'll be interviewing two other business owners and top executives here from the Orange County business community, I'm hoping that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass on Orange County's only all-talk radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.